For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Dynasty Dugout Show, a podcast covering all things minor league baseball. Get a front row seat to the action with everything you need to know about the future stars of Major League Baseball. And now, here's your host, Chris Clegg.
Welcome into the Dynasty Dugout Show. Today is February the 12th. Pitchers and catchers have reported today, and it feels like baseball is back. I am honored today to be joined by a special guest, an MLB legend, if you would say, longtime manager. Clint Hurdle is joining me for an interview today. Clint, thank you so much for your time. How are you doing today?
Chris, I'm good. Good morning to you, and thank you for the opportunity to be on with you.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate you joining me. You just had a new book release yesterday as we're recording this, so that's exciting times for you. You've had a great career, and now you've taken that new step. So what's that been like to be a published author?
Well, I'm always looking for ways to grow. Every year at the new year, it started a while ago. I was encouraged by John Gordon, Dan Britton, and Jimmy Page. They wrote a book called One Word, and I've been picking out one word for years. Started in Pittsburgh with my staff, moved on to my family, friends. And in 2023, my word was grow. And that year, I jumped into a bunch of new things. I had been retired 2 years, and I just didn't want to settle. I wanted to continue to find things that stimulated me, opportunities for growth, personally, spiritually, physically. And as it worked into dabbling on social media, which now I've become much more immersed in social media, spreading positivity. I put out a daily email that goes to over 8,300 people. I found an opportunity to co-author a book, which at the end of the day, that didn't work. And John Gordon, my good friend, actually double dog dared me to write my own book. And I didn't want any part of it, Chris. I had all the reasons why. And at the end of all my reasoning why I shouldn't and why I should co-author, basically co-authoring, it's an easier, softer way, and somebody else does all the work. An accomplished author does all the work. That's what I was looking for. But he just said, so you're afraid to write your own book. And I think, you know, if you go back to your days when you're 12, somebody says you're afraid of, you know, fists come up.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not. He goes, write the book. He said, I've known you for 15 years. I've been writing down hurdleisms for 15 years. I go, what? You've been writing down what? He goes, hurdleisms. I'd never heard the term before. He said, well, these are just nuggets of wisdom that you've shared with me that I've written down, and I put a hurdleism by it. I'm just saying, Clint, you need to give this a shot. So that's where it started. It has landed now. The book went out yesterday and, you know, in the hardcover form. The pre-orders were, the sales were vibrant. There's some traction going on right now. Some of the reviews I'm getting from friends and family is good, but that's friends and family. I'm looking as it gets out to see what people think. I'm glad I wrote. I'm glad I put life lessons on paper for other people to read. It's very authentic. It's very transparent. It shares the good, the bad, the happy, the sad, the ugly, the failures, and how I was able to work through many of my challenges and how I was able to celebrate success and share success. So now it's very humbling, and we'll just see where it ends up landing.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm excited to get my hands on it. You have a lot of good insight. I've seen a lot of your good posts on Twitter, so I've enjoyed reading those. So I'm excited to grab the book and read that. But let's take you back a little bit. I want to take you back to the beginning of your playing career, pro career. You played football and baseball in high school, if I'm not mistaken. And I read you had some pretty good opportunities to play both at the collegiate level. I ended up getting drafted first round out of high school. But was baseball always the first love, or was there a pretty good passion for football as well?
Baseball was always the first love. As I share with people now, 62 years ago, my dad took me out in the backyard, looked down at me and said, hey, son, you want to play catch? And I said, Dad, catch what? He said, I got a baseball and I got two gloves. Well, we've been playing catch ever since. I've been playing catch ever since. And actually, earlier in January, I went out and played catch with my dad. I'm 67. He's 91.
Wow.
Awesome. Baseball has been my passion. It's what makes my tail wag. Football, I enjoyed Friday night. I enjoyed the team concept, but it wasn't the same. Practice was practice. Baseball practice was never work. And I did have opportunities for both sports separately. And then I had a couple schools that offered opportunities for me to do both. University of Virginia was one. The University of Miami was one. And fortunately, I had another option. I was accepted, had an academic scholarship offered to Harvard. So coming out of high school, I put myself in a position to have some choices. And I'll never regret the choice I made. It's taken me all over the world and all over the place, emotionally, physically, spiritually, and personally. However, I'm still engaged in it. So from the time I was five, baseball was the deal.
Yep. That's certainly say you made the right choice with how your career's gone. But you know, you had a playing career for a while before managing, and 5 years with the Royals after being drafted, and you're part of that 1980 pennant team. You had some pretty impressive teammates. That was one of your best playing years as well. What made that 1980s Royal team so special?
As I look back over my career, whether it's a player, coach, or manager, Chris, I wish I could say every team I played on, coached, or managed had this special gift. It's called mudita. It's a Buddhist term for expressive joy for the success of others. I played on teams that we didn't have that. I coached teams that we didn't have it, and I managed some teams that didn't really have it. That 80s team, we all pulled for one another. Yeah, George was the guy, but there were so many wonderful seasons had by others. Frank White was the American League MVP against the Yankees that year. Daryl Porter put up crazy numbers. You got Otis, you got Willie Wilson. Of course, you got George, you got Willie Mays Akins, who in that World Series went crazy wild with hitting home runs. But the pitching staff, Gura, Splittorff, Dennis Leonard, and we had Quisenberry closing things down. He was a knuckle-dragging reliever from down under. We just gelled as a team, and you hear the term, sounds cheesy at times, but we were a family. Our team was a family. And again, not every team I played on had that kind of mojo or that kind of rhythm or that kind of cohesion.
Yeah, definitely a special team. And I think that, you know, you can have all the talented players, but you definitely have to have that special aspect as a team, as you mentioned. I think that's so important. And, you know, we see teams still today. I mean, there's super teams. There's teams that, you know, but they don't always win the World Series. You look at teams that get hot at the right time. They have the cohesion. They just gel together and they make it work. So take you to the end of your playing career. You wrapped up in 1987. And you immediately got a managerial position in the minor leagues with the St. Lucie Mets. What was that transition like, going from player to manager within a short time like that?
As most of the things that have worked out well in my life, it wasn't by my design. Most of my best made intentions have either ran out of gas, they frazzled, they disconnected when I tried to force something to happen. But this one was kind of funny, and I'll give you the Cliff Note version. I was at the end of my career. I knew that. The last three springs, I had gone in as a non-roster player and made a major league team, which is hard to do. I did it twice with the Mets, once with the Cardinals. As we're going into the 88 season, our farm director, Steve Scriver, calls me up and asks me, hey, you know, are you still playing? Yeah, I'm still playing, Steve. He goes, have you ever thought about managing or coaching? I said, well, I'm giving it a little more thought now. Once I got behind the plate and started catching, it opened the game up for me in so many different ways. And I wasn't playing a lot anyway, so I had a lot of time on my hands, a lot of time to think. But I said, Steve, I've thought about it. He goes, well, listen, I've got an opportunity at low rookie ball up in New York. I'd love for you to take that job and be our manager. And I said, well, that's humbling, and thank you. I said, but we just built a complex. I said, we just built a complex in Port St. Lucie, Florida. I live in Stuart. It's only 40 minutes away. How about that job? Do you have anybody for that job? And he picked up that phone and he gave me an earful. I had to pull the phone away from my ear about why I wasn't qualified. I wasn't ready. There's no way. And at the end, I go, okay, Steve, thanks. I'm going to still play. And I hung up the phone. A week later, get another call. Are you still playing? Well, Steve, I'm thinking about it. And He goes, well, listen, I got a better opportunity for you. The high rookie ball team in Tennessee. I need a manager there. I'm willing to bump you up a level and give you that shot. And I go, Steve, that's so sweet. Thank you very much. Have you filled the spot in St. Lucie? No, I haven't filled the spot in St. Lucie. And he yells at me again. We go through this. He offers me the low A ball job somewhere. I say, no. He hangs up. Finally, we've had this conversation now for 3 weeks. He goes, so you're saying if I can put you in charge of that St. Lucie club, that you'll retire? And I said, Steve, only good players retire. I'm running out of options. I said, I've got two teams, NRI. Yeah, I'll go down there tomorrow and manage that team. So he goes, okay, the job's yours. So basically, Chris, I fell into my first minor league managing opportunity by threatening to play.
That's a pretty great story. And it sounds like it worked out quite well for you, because obviously you went on to have quite a successful career, and you worked yourself up the ladder. You spend a decent bit of time in the Rockies organization before getting that first MLB managerial job. But you know, entering that 2002 season, you had been in the Rockies org for 8 years, if I'm not mistaken. You get the phone call early in the year about being promoted to manager. What was that moment like for you?
Well, it was a surreal moment because I had been on the staff for a few years. Don Baylor hired me first. Jim Leland kept me on, and then Buddy Bell kept me on as a hitting coach. We were not playing well, and hitting was part of our problem. And throughout the week, our general manager, Dan O'Dowd, had shared with me the need to sit down and talk. And I kind of trying to read through the tea leaves, and I'm thinking, my job's on the line. And I just couldn't figure out a time for us to meet when he wanted to meet. And I said, look, I had some things going on, some dental work going on. I couldn't back out. But eventually it came to the day where he goes, Clint, I'm coming over to your house. I'll be there at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, oh my Lord, he's going to fire me. Because, you know, one of the most humbling things can happen to a player, coach, or manager is being told you're let go while you're in the clubhouse. You got to go pack a bag and you got to walk out because you're not good enough right now. So I'm thinking, well, he's going to let me go at home. I don't have to have the walk of shame. I can go back when nobody's there and get my stuff. I call my dad and say, hey, the GM's coming over to let me go. He's like, oh no. I go, yeah. It's been rough, Dad. You know, somebody's got to go. They're not getting rid of the manager of the team. Dan sat down. He laid out what had gone on the first 2 months of the season, basically. Or I want to say maybe a month and a half. And goes, I talked to Buddy this morning, and I let him go. And I'm wondering, and I'm asking you if you'll be the interim manager. I didn't see it coming. I couldn't speak. I couldn't spit. And I said, excuse me? And he repeated himself again, I want you to be the interim manager. I said, yes, yes. So we talk a little bit. He leaves. I called my dad. I said, Dad, you're not going to believe what happened. He goes, so did he fire you? I go, no. Dad, I'm managing the game tonight. We're playing the Phillies. You and Mom need to get on a plane and get here. That's how it came about, my first managerial opportunity with Colorado and with Dan, who we are still friends to this day. He gave me the first opportunity. He believed in me when probably, I don't know if many other people would have.
That's a phenomenal story. I mean, that's certainly right there with your first job in the minors too, how that transpired, because I can only imagine how you're feeling getting the call from the GM to come to your house. Like that's crazy how that transpired. But you know, you went on to have a lot of success in Colorado. You win the NL pennant in 07, obviously quite the high there. And then you were dismissed in 09 after just 46 games. You talked a lot about life lessons. That's what your book's all about. How did you, or what life lessons were learned throughout that process of that first managerial job? And how do you handle the ups and downs of baseball and life?
Well, for me, my faith plays a large component. And I really believe if you just take care of your job, you're going to have the best opportunity to keep your job. It's when you start worrying about keeping your job that you lose sight of the job you have to do. Kelly McGregor was our team president. And when he was part of the group that gave me the opportunity to manage, one day in my office, he said, Clint, I really just want you to focus on being managerial. When you leave this office or the ballpark, you're still the manager of the Rockies. You know, where you go, your brand, our brand goes with you. And he said, I want to remind you, as long as God wants you in that chair, no man can take you out. And when God doesn't want you in that chair anymore, no man can keep you there. he was part of the group that let me go. So when I got let go, I had spent 5 years as a hitting coach, over 8 years as a manager. I got 14 years invested, not to count the years in the minor leagues. I got a lot of time invested in the Rockies organization. And I had been an encourager of culture, cohesion, community, teamwork. Nobody's better than, nobody's less than, everybody matters. So if I go out yelling, screaming, kicking, and pointing fingers, what I tried to attempt to build over, you know, 15, 16 years, I could have tore down in half an hour. And I wasn't going to do that. So actually, there's a part in my book where I talk about honoring the exit wherever you are, whenever you're let go or asked to leave. So I just honored the exit and knew that I'd given it everything I had. God didn't want me there anymore, and I trusted he had something different, something better in line for me. And as turned out, I went to Texas the next year, went to the World Series. After that, I got another managerial opportunity. I spent 9 years in Pittsburgh. We did some crazy cool things there. So by honoring the exit, I've always felt good about the work I had done, the people I had touched, the people that had touched me, and the success we shared.
Yeah, that's the best way to go about life, in my opinion, for sure. I want to ask you about managing Coors Field, though, because we know the environment, the altitude, the game just plays different there. Were there things that you did differently as a manager in Coors versus other places?
We tried different things. You know, we tried different practice routines. We would, you know, when we'd come back from the road, we'd usually give our guy, we got them, try to get them right on the field the next day, and then gave them a breather the second day as we did our testing, our cardio work. I worked with our strength coach. I worked with our trainers. And we actually asked a lot of questions from the group, the Olympic team committee in Colorado Springs, about how they trained at altitude. So we had a little different training methods at home versus on the road. Also, you know, there was a point in time where we figured out the whole humidor thing for the baseballs, because the baseballs left alone in the closet were shrinking, getting smaller and harder. And obviously, the ball's already flying out of the ballpark. So when you combine that with a hot ball, things got nuts for a few years. And the other hard part that I don't think a lot of people haven't never embraced, and I think it's still hard to, if you're an offensive player in Coors Field, truthfully, you never feel you're out of the game. And it's hard to take your first team out sometimes, like you can on the road some other place. You're seven runs down the seventh inning. You know, sometimes eighth, you give a guy an inning, give somebody two innings off or something. It's hard in Colorado. The other hard part is not just physically removed from the game, but for them to mentally remove themselves from the game, because they're grinding. They never know what inning is going to be a big inning, and sometimes that grind gets into an overdrive. So there's a give and a take. It's understanding for the starting pitcher, too, that, hey, six innings and three runs, that plagues a lot of places. That's not really going to play here. So a quality start is you leaving and we're ahead, or we have a chance to win the game. And it's hard for them to wrap their head around that, because numbers do mean things, especially when they get to contract negotiations. But the good groups we had there, it seemed like the men were more easily swayed to let go of individual things and focus on the group collective. And that's when we had our most success.
Yeah, that's really good insight. You moved on to Pittsburgh after Colorado. Two seasons in, you lead the Pirates to their most successful season since 1992 and had a pretty impressive run through 2015 as well. What was different about those Pirates teams than previous teams, you think?
Well, I wasn't there for the previous teams. I know the day I took the job, we had lost 212 games in back-to-back seasons.
Yeah.
It's a lot of losses.
Yeah.
And the first 2 years I was there, you know, 18 consecutive losing seasons, naively you think, you know, if I just walk in and we do okay, things are going to change, because things change. You know, things just change. We're not going to lose forever. Nobody loses forever. Well, two more losing seasons, and both of those seasons had really good starts to them. At the All-Star break, we were in the hunt. We hadn't been in the hunt for anything in a long time. And then we, you know, some people say we collapsed the second half of the season. We fell off. There's no doubt. We got kicked off the playground. Lack of depth. Our guys got tired. We ran out of some pitching, both in the bullpen and the starting pitching. We just weren't good enough. But we learned lessons those first 2 years that put us in a much more competitive state in 13. And then the addition of Burnett, the addition of Martin. Our core players had grown up. McCutchen, Marte, Alvarez, Walker, We continued to develop. Polanco came on board, but the starting pitching was so good. The bullpen was locked down. We went from a team that everybody was trying to schedule to play the homecoming game to when you came in PNC and it was packed, it was a hostile environment, and we had a mean, tough team that was going to let you know you were in for a fist fight.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Yeah, that's certainly true. PNC for a while, you know, during those years was rocking. You know, that's definitely the height of the Pirates run recently, and you were in the midst of that. But, you know, aside from the wins and NL pennant, successful managerial career, what legacy do you hope you left behind to the players and the coaches that you spent your career with?
I mentioned at my press conference that they had in 2010 in the winter before I went in, our goal was to rebond the city with its baseball team because they had separated, had lost touch. My son would go to school in Pirate gear and get made fun of. The vendors downtown were struggling. The hotel, the entertainment business was struggling. Can you imagine what it would have been like to sell season tickets for the Pirates through that time? So basically, everybody's job got easier. Everybody got to experience a level of joy that they had experienced. And in that game you talk about where Cueto dropped the ball, there were three generations of people at that game. There was grandfathers with their sons, grandmothers with their daughters. And it's kind of funny because one of the things I first got introduced to in Pittsburgh was, you know, Mazeroski's iconic walk-off homer in Game 7 against the Yankees. And as I was there the first 2 years, there must have been 50,000 people that told me they were at the game. And as I looked up Forbes Field attendance back, and there was like 37,000. Well, to this day now, you go back to Pittsburgh and you talk about that Cueto game, there's 100,000 people were at that game as well. I mean, it's a tradition-rich city for sports, including baseball. And to see that park vibrant and to see joy on people's faces and them to walk proud with the raise the Jolly Roger flags and all the other things that come with it, that would be the thing that I walk away with and really feel good about.
Yeah, for sure. And so Pirates, I'd love to see them get back to those levels again. The farm system is insanely talented. Obviously, have a lot of young pitching talent as well. So, you know, PNC is a beautiful park, and I just like when the Pirates are in contention. So you retired in 2019. You later returned to the Rockies in 2021 as a special assistant to the GM. What's that role look like for you? And are you still going to be doing some things with the Rockies this upcoming season?
I'm on for my fourth year. I did take 2 years off. And it's something I never thought I would do. I never thought I'd walk away from the game. And at the time, I wasn't sure I was walking away or hitting pause, but I knew that it was time to take off the uniform. And I actually shared that. You know, I was going to take off the, put the uniform in the closet and sign a lifetime contract with the home team. My family, all they ever knew of Dad was he's home 2 weeks and he's gone 2 weeks out of every month. My wife, Carla and I, we've been married 25 years, and it was the same deal. So the 2 years at home were incredible blessings in many different ways. However, when the Rockies reached out to me and asked if I had interest in getting back in the organization, number one, a lot of love there. And they were good to me back in the day, and I still feel partial to them as I do the Pirates. I poured my heart and soul in those two organizations. I was hoping for an opportunity to work with kids and work with young managers, and that's exactly the opportunity they wanted me to have. It wasn't with the big league club. It wasn't in a front office every day at the big league level. It was navigating the minor league system, making sure all our programs are in alignment from the Dominican to AAA, to working with young managers and coaches, mentoring, being a guide on the side, spending time with the young pitchers and players, because there's a lot I've experienced that may be helpful or beneficial for me to share with them time to time. There's not many days I'm on the road where I'm not having lunch with somebody and just getting to know them and looking for that kid that's hurting, or look for that kid that's homesick, or looking for the kids dumped in a slump and trying to figure things out. So it has been very, very fruitful for me. And hopefully I'm giving back enough that it's making it a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. I think I saw you at the AFL. Actually, I was out there for a week at the Fall League. I think you're out there doing some scouting work. So certainly good to see you still part of the game. To wrap up, obviously we talked a little bit about your book to begin, but do you have a favorite hurdleism that you want to share with the people before we close out?
Yeah, it goes back to one of the chapters where we talk about a lifelong learner, a white belt mentality. My son Christian right now is an aspiring pastry chef and baker. He's in Aspen on an externship for 10 weeks. He's in week 5, and he goes to the Culinary Institute of America for his college work. But my son neutered me as a parent, because the sport picked. He retired from baseball at the age of 4, and he was a man of his word. He never went back. But he picked tennis, then he picked karate, and then he picked crew. And crew turned out to be a tremendous blessing. But in karate, there came a day when he said, "Dad, Mom, I need some money. I need to go get my uniform." And we said, "Well, son, I don't think it's called a uniform." He goes, "Oh, yeah, it's called an obi." He said, "But I need it." Okay, we give him the money. He comes back. He's got it under his arm. I said, "Hey, go put it on and come down and show us what you learned today." He puts the obi on. He comes down. He's showing us some moves and some kicks. He forgot to put his belt on. So the obi's hanging open. I go, "Hey, buddy, your belt, man. I can see your drawers. Go back up there and get that." "Oh, I got to get it tied up, Dad. You're right. I got to get my belt." So he comes down. Belt's tied in his obi, and he goes, "Dad, you know what kind of belt I have?" To myself, Chris, I'm thinking, yeah, you got the white belt. Means you know nothing. He goes, "Dad, I got the white belt. You know what that means?" I'm like, "No, tell me, son, what does that mean?" He goes, "It means I have an opportunity to learn everything. I can be a lifelong learner." I ran with that thought back to our mental skills coach, Bernie Holiday. He had a story to back it up. We've shared that throughout our minor league system and big league system and the Pirates. I took it back to Colorado when I came back. We're using it in a few teaching environments I'm in right now. But to be a lifelong learner, to have a white belt mentality, that would be one of my favorite chapters for sure.
It's awesome. That's a great inspiration to end the show with. And certainly, I encourage everybody listening to go check out the book, buy a copy. Reading is important. Lifelong learning is important. And I think that the words and wisdom of Clint Hurdle will absolutely be inspirational to a lot. I'm looking forward to grabbing a copy myself. But Clint, thank you so much for your time today. It's an honor to chat with you. And best of luck in your career moving forward as an author and also still working with the Rockies.
Chris, thank you very much, Chris, for the opportunity. Thank you.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.